Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're going to be talking about safety concerns at Ballylass National School. If that's something that you have a view on or something that you want to have a view on shared across the Northwest and beyond, please get in touch with us now and you can have your voice heard. Some of your comments off the back of our Friday panel. Again, thanks to Lisa, Mary T and Paddy. Ask Paddy why the removal of files was outsourced in the first place. Should they not have been stored by HSE staff? Typical HSC, someone outside the organisation making a few pounds. Well, I presume because there was toxic, the water was seen as toxic, that would be something that you would, they have to be digitised and then disposed of responsibly. So I can understand why that would be outsourced. Greg, I think everyone will agree that the things that Israel is doing are as bad or maybe even worse than what Russia is doing. Russia was more or less ostracised from the world when they attacked Ukraine. They were banned from all sporting competition, whereas Israel is still going on as normal. And on Wednesday evening, they were playing Switzerland in a Euro 24 qualifier. The worst case scenario for UEFA would be if Israel actually qualified for the tournament next summer. It does seem to be that there are double standards here when a country that could actually be committing war crimes is allowed to continue as normal just because the big and the powerful are on their side. And it is as simple as that. It would be very hard to argue otherwise to that point of view. Russia invades Ukraine, sanctions within a week. Israel invades Gaza with 100 times the violent force, and the EU supports it along with the US hypocrisy. It's alive and well. And Ireland should call for a ban on Israel competing in sporting competitions and the European Song Contest. Senator Chambers referred to Varadkar as being the head of the state. Perhaps someone could point out to her that the president is the head of the state. Another caller says the HSE don't seem to want to accept responsibility for files being left in the wrong place. It's down to management, not the staff of nurses or doctors. When a person passes away, why are medical files not given back to next of kin? Why keep hundreds of thousands of files where they shouldn't be? Greg, why have on your show right-wing people that seem to think, like our government, that our economy is more important than 4,000 children plus the same amount with the loss of limbs? Well, it's a conversation. And it's important, I believe, that we do have a conversation. And, you know, right-wing, left-wing, does it really matter? It's all about an exchange of views and finding some common ground. Climate change and war pandemics, digital passport, cashless society, all seems like the world population is living through some big changes and just keep living in fear. I'm not afraid. Is anyone, are you afraid? I'm not afraid of a conversation about the use of cash or not, or the climate. I'd be fearful for my grandchildren if I'm lucky to have them. A question for the Fianna Fáil senators. The attendance of the Israeli ambassador at the Fianna Fáil Ardèche was strange amidst all the killings in Palestine, best described as genocide. Thanks. Lisa Chambers responded to that in saying, I don't think it was an Ardèche, but it was a conference that all ambassadors were invited, including the Palestinian ambassador who was there, she says. How can politicians and the press water down the murder of innocent people in Gaza by calling it collective punishment? Shame on politicians. They should know better with the history of oppression we have in Ireland over the years. Why did the British stick with the Jews in the middle of a... Why did they stick the Jews in the middle of Muslims after the war? Common sense should surely have told them it would never work. I'm very pleased to hear Paddy and Mary speaking out about what's happening with Israel. I'm really annoyed at President Biden, Rishi Sunak and Ursula von der Leyen for supporting this terror. There is a world war. They're a disgrace. It's an atrocity. Innocent children are dying. Another caller says, expel the Israeli ambassador now. Sanctions are not being imposed. Another, the Egyptians are reluctant not to open the Arafat border crossing as they do not want an influx of refugees nor Hamas fighters into Egypt as they have enough problems on the Sinai Peninsula with ISIS, Al-Qaeda. That's is the main route Palestinians, that's the main reason why Palestinians can't leave Gaza, they say. Hi, Greg, one of your speakers, I did actually read that one, yes, okay. The Irish Army have had a number of personnel killed in the Lebanon by the Cresti Militia, backed by Israel. Two were actually taken and murdered, says a listener. Could we get more opinions from some Palestinians who are living about how they feel about Hamas? We don't know enough about it. Are Hamas the government? Are they a bad element? We need to be careful. Maybe Ireland is getting involved in too many conflicts. And it was kind of interesting because we had, and the gentleman's name escapes me, but my understanding was, and this was published data, that Hamas has about 60% passive or strong, this was pre-war, strong support amongst Palestinians. But I was corrected. He says, no, they're elected. They have 100% support of Palestinians. That was in the early days after that atrocity. So I don't know. There are Palestinian people that listen to this program. What are your views in relation to that? Could you put some questions to Minister Donnelly about the hospital and why we have to go to Galway or Dublin? It's not fair for the people of Donegal to have to travel distances. Well, we are, of course. I mean, I presume you would know. He is due to visit later this month. We are going to seek an interview with him, and we shall be teasing all that out with him if he's good enough to accept that interview. And he did tell us that he would make himself available during an outside broadcast. I was in McElhenney's in Ballybuffet. We had him on the phone. We didn't have an awful long time with him because it was a Friday in the nature of the programme, but he said as soon as he's up here that he would speak to us. So let's hope that he stays true to that commitment. Israel being allowed to commit war crimes with impunity is proof that money and power that they hold is more important than the lives of innocent babies, children, men and women. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are standing idly by and talking the talk, but not walking it as usual. Intel, etc. are Israeli companies. It's all about money. You can be anti-Israel, not anti-Jewish. Morning, Greg. I cannot believe what I'm hearing from your panel member. A war is not killing children. Full stop. Thank you. Greg, the dogs on the street know what's going on. It's all about kissing backside and keeping Israel sweet because they have the oil. America, Britain, France and Ireland. And on they go. I'm trying to give a good representation of the comments that are coming in. And we've been really busy in that regard. I'll get to more of them as the show wears on. I just want to let you know that the Good and New Cancer Shop is open Monday to Thursday, 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. The bus to Galway continues on a daily basis. So feel free to call 074-91-13437. So the Good and New Cancer Shop, it remains open Monday to Thursday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and it helps fund that really vital service, the cancer bus which runs to Galway every single day. And also I've been asked to mention that Gardaí are viewing CCTV footage after a mountain bike was stolen from behind the Good and New charity shop in Letterkenny on Thursday. The suspect was spotted cycling the bike through the little car park and onto the port road. He's in his 40s and bald. If you see this man, the owner has asked that any information goes to Letterkenny Gardaí on 07491 67100. Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. And we move on to the important issue of road safety issues at Ballylast National School. It is in Castlefin. Jacinta Walsh is principal of the school and joins us on the programme now. Thanks so much for your time, Jacinta. I do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having us on.
So for those who may not be aware of the school and its location and the safety concerns, can you give us a brief overview, please?
I suppose, yes. The context of our school is that we're a small rural school. We're between Lifford and Castlefin on the main M15 road. Currently, we're having issues with the safety, the speed and traffic, and of course, the fence that acts as a barrier between the main road and our school. Recently, we were involved in a safety at the gate school day, whereby the Pashka Green School, the Garda Síochána visited the school, and the children made posters and did a demonstration on the day. And I suppose what we were doing on that day was highlighting the speeding of traffic on the road.
That fence, it provides a barrier between the road and the drop-off point. It doesn't provide any security. That would barely keep a cow in. It is not there to prevent any injury, clearly.
Absolutely. I suppose we've had ongoing issues going back, I suppose, dating 2010 with the actual fence. Previously, we had just what I would call an ordinary domestic fence that acted as a barrier, and then about 6 years ago, the roadworks just outside the school and the council erected another fence that consists of...
Jacinta, your line is absolutely terrible there. Can I come back to you? Maybe you could just step towards a window or take up a different position because it's such an important issue. I want to be able to make sure I can hear you. So you talked about...
Okay.
Yeah, that's perfect, I think. You talked about the fence being, in inverted commas, upgraded.
It was. About 6 years ago, the council, because there had been several accidents and there were roadworks that were being carried out outside the school, they decided to upgrade the fence. So at present, that fence then was made of materials that were, in my view, not acceptable. It's made from wire. But the bigger problem is that when you're exiting the drop-off area from the school, the vision lines are obstructed because of the height of the view. So when you're travelling by car, exiting the drop-off, or you're a pedestrian, you actually have to step out onto the carriageway, so that you can, you know, to see if there is any traffic coming. So that is a huge problem at the moment.
Now, it is a very, seems like well-serviced, straight stretch of road.
Absolutely.
So I imagine there's quite a lot of speed on it. Your school was one of the schools identified, if my memory serves me correctly, for variable speed limits. Were they ever installed? Not that that's what we're talking about, just to find out if they ever went into situ.
Well, what at the moment, there are flashing lights on the approach, both from Lifford and from Castlefin, which indicates traffic, that the speed limit there is 60 kilometres per hour. But our experience is that very rarely they're adhered to. There has been a review by the Donegal County Council recently whereby they are looking to decrease the speed limit along that road to a recommended 80 or 60. Mm. And I've been told that that's not going to come in until early 2024.
Right. Aidan McIntyre is chair of the Board of Management at Ballylast National School in Castlefin. I mean, obviously, Aidan, this is born of genuine concern for students and parents and guardians and those in buses dropping students off and on, or else you wouldn't be going to the length that you are to try and bring attention to this, Aidan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've been involved with this now since around about 2010, lobbying politicians, you know, council, NRA. And our whole goal in this is to improve the safety. You know, we're not looking for a new car park to be built or anything like that. It's a safety issue. You know, when you arrive on there on a Sunday morning and you see the devastation that has been caused to the fence by cars travelling at speed over the weekend, and luckily over the weekend when there was no students around, you see the need that something needs to be done. Because if this happened during school hours, though, somebody would very, very least severely injured, if not killed.
And this road has been developed beside the school as such, isn't it? It's not like we built this school on the side of a road that has the level of traffic now, that has the sort of, you know, the speed limit on it now. Do you know what I mean? Often schools, and I can think of a handful of them off the top of my head, as roads were being designed, they should have said, you know, there's a school here. We need to make special provision to keep the students, the staff and the parents safe. But we don't tend to do that for some strange reason.
Absolutely. The school was there long before the road was widened to its current extent. And it's going to be even wider now with the Greenway project. But yes, you know, somebody needs to step up and say, yes, there is a school there. We need to do something to protect, you know, the students, the staff, and everyone. Mm. You know, the Greenway project now, that is a fantastic project that has been built between Lifford and Castlefin, is using the area that we call the exit from a rough spot. That's where the crossing is going to be there. And it's going to be exactly the same for the people using the Greenway. To cross that road, you physically have to step out into the road to see if there's any traffic coming from Lifford. And they come at such a speed there that once you step out, it's almost too late.
Yeah.
You know, the car is on top of you.
I mean, obviously then this is going to be, well, the council can't do it because it's TII, and the TII says, well, we've got certain criteria before we implement this, that and then, and we have to do surveys and then it has to be this, that. We don't want to get caught up in all of that stuff and in the meantime have a severe accident. It wouldn't be an accident, obviously, because road conditions contribute to it. So a severe collision with the potential loss of life.
Yes, as I say, we've been dealing with this for 14 years. We've been trying to get something sorted with this. The Greenway project has basically brought it to a head now because it's going to make things much, much worse.
Jacinta, I mean, have you had any contact from, and we're not going to politicise this, I'm not trying to do that because you'll take any help you can get, but is this being raised at political level on your behalf, Jacinta? Let me put it to you like that.
Yes, it has, and we've been very lucky. We've had the support of numerous local councillors throughout the years, and indeed we've had support.
Yeah, but you're just into your lines failing on us there again. But
yes.
I'll put the same question to you, Aidan. I mean, you know, is there a political will to see this resolved? Is it? Are we knocking our heads against
Absolutely.
The TII at this point then?
Well, no, to be fair to all the local politicians and government representatives that we've been in contact with, they've all been very, very good and they've tried their best to help. But as you say, we're between... You know, the Donegal County Council saying, well, it's a national road, so it's really the NRA. And then the NRA come back and say, well, it's a national road. You can't do this on a national road. You can't do that on a national road. And we're between a rock and a hard place. Basically, at the end of the day, despite everyone's great intentions, nothing is being done.
What's the solution with defence? Is it one that would protect those in the school from a car hitting it? Does it need to be lower? We're not engineers, don't get me wrong, Aidan, but I'm sure there's been plenty of conversation of what you believe might be the best thing to do. And of course, then in conjunction with looking at speed limits. But what do you think the solution is?
Improving the vision lines is to lower the fence that's already there and remove the netting wire that's attached to the fence. It's been that when you're looking along the fence towards Lifford that is blocking your vision lines, if the netting wire was removed, it won't affect the integrity of the fence one little bit or, you know, disimprove its security because it's not secure, but it will help. So lowering the fence...
Yeah. It was a bizarre addition, that sheep fencing wire, wasn't it? It's a peculiar addition.
Well, it's not really fencing wire. It's plasticky. It would be more like the kind of stuff that you would put on a garden fence to stop things growing through it.
All right. Is it see-through or there's a colour on it?
It's perforated, but it is see-through when you're standing looking directly
that
at
it. Explains it, yeah.
But when you're looking along 100 yards of
understood.
You know, if you're, it's not see-through.
Right. Okay. So I don't know who might be responsible, but I don't think the TII are they responsible for the fence?
I'm not sure who's responsible for the fence. I think it was Donegal County Council that put it in when they did the road improvements.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say for sure, and that Jacinta might know that better than I do.
Jacinta, do you know who's actually responsible for the fence design?
Again, that fence was erected and put in by the Donegal County
Right,
Council.
Okay. Well, we can make inquiries in that regard.
Who are responsible.
Yep,
yeah.
No problem. We'll make inquiries in that regard. So that's the first instance. I don't think it's a big ask to protect children. And I don't think it's going to be hugely expensive either. And in terms of then the wider safety measures, Jacinta, there is a review of speed limits ongoing at the moment and will be ongoing.
There are, yes.
If we sort of start talking about, they're going to say, well, that'll be included as part of that review. Do you think there's any other measures that need to be introduced to improve safety?
I suppose, no, maybe some extra signage on the approaches from either Castlefin or Lifford. I suppose anything that just highlights to the users of that road that there is a school there, that it is being used by parents, by teachers, by ancillary staff, by the whole community. And I suppose the awareness that the school is actually there and that there's a great need to reduce speed. The way that I see that is that you erect more signage or that there is, the flashing lights are maybe extra to what they are at present, because even though they are there, they're not being heeded, and that's the bottom line, Greg.
Yeah, and even maybe, and what I don't understand is the odd morning, a patrol car with a speed gun.
Absolutely.
You don't need a guard of presence, so you know that maybe possibly you might get done. And I don't understand why we don't send the occasional squad car out to these schools where we have these temporary speed limits. I was driving up Lurgybreck yesterday. I reduced to 60 And two drivers passed me flashing the lights and bibbering their horns. I felt bad for stopping at heeding the speed limit. I'm no angel, don't get me wrong, but I would try and be as respectful as I can past schools. All right, Jacinta, Aidan, I don't think what you're calling for can be beyond the powers that be. You know, sometimes we discuss issues like this and you can see that where the problems may lie, but it's very common sense, it's very practical, and hopefully the right ears are listening, and we're going to make our inquiries, and we're just trying to keep children, staff and parents safe. Thanks so much for sharing the story with us. Aidan, did you want to say something else?
No, I'm just saying that's all we want. Yeah. Safety is the main issue.
Brilliant stuff. All right, Aidan McIntyre, Chair of Board of Management at Ballylass National School in Castlefin. Jacinta Walsh, big hello to all the students, of course, and teachers. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Big hello to everybody in Ballylass this morning.
All right. Take care of yourselves. Thank you very much indeed. We go to Conor Faulkner now, transport consultant. Good morning to you, Conor. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Hello.
Very good to have you on the programme. Now, it's hard to believe we've arrived in November of 2023 to be able to say that Gardaí now have access to the details of every insured driver in the country. The data of all insured drivers and vehicles in the state is now being shared with An Garda Síochána, which is critical, really, to the work that they do.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, but it's very welcome. And we've been talking about this for well over 10 years. There's supposed to be a database whereby the Gardaí can immediately tell by registration number what car is insured and who's insured to drive it. Now, it was a long time putting it in place, but that is now in place, which is terrific. It's modern enforcement, and it should go a long way towards improving the big problem we have with uninsured driving. Uninsured driving is way too high in Ireland, and this is one of the reasons. Now, it won't solve the problem completely, but it will definitely help. So it's a good news story. It's been a bad year for road safety. We know that.
Yeah. But also, this
advance is good.
I beg your pardon. Also, we know, really, that there was general knowledge that you could get away with it because there had to have been, or else we wouldn't have the level of uninsured drivers that we do.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, when you consider it up to now, the only way a Garda had of checking that a car was actually insured, if the disc looked fine in a Garda's torchlight, there wasn't much else he could do unless he had another reason to check the details of the driver, which means if you do drive uninsured, you'd nearly need to be unlucky or have a crash for you to be caught. And in a landscape like that, unsurprisingly, we had as many as 8% of Irish drivers at any one time not properly insured for the vehicle they were driving. And it's an invisible crime in a sense because we all pick up the tab for it. The Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland is the fund that comes out of all of our insurance policies. Mm-hmm. And it goes to pay for uninsured drivers. So it adds about 40 or 50 euro per annum to every motor insurance policy in the country. Crazy that it's been allowed to be so bad for so long.
And just to give people an idea of the scale, 188,000 vehicles. And I suppose really what the general population want to see now is that, if that number is reduced and other measures that have been introduced in relation to, false claims or payments or what have you, people need to see it in the pocket as well now. And then they'll go, right, OK, that's a good move. That worked well. Do you know what I mean? I think that has to come along sometimes with these measures for the public really to get behind it.
Yeah, you have to prove that what you're trying to achieve is working. We've talked many times over the years, Greg, about high insurance prices. It has been a scourge. And, a lot of good work has been done there, and it's not finished. But motor insurance prices are in a better place than they were. Yeah. It won't help if our accident record gets worse. That feeds into it too. So it's kind of all part of that mix. But it would be unfair to say that we haven't made any progress because we have. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, on road deaths, that headline figure, that all-important headline figure, 2023 is a disastrous year. The not enough Gardaí out and about, and various other factors contributing to road deaths going up. And lots and lots and lots to do on that front. But at least we can celebrate the good when it happens. And as I say, the arrival of the proper insurance database, it should be welcomed and is a decent step forward to tidying up that part of the of the problem, if you wish.
Yeah, and the information will be updated every evening as well. So if you are driving an uninsured, or if you're driving someone else's car that is insured but you're not insured, they have access to name drivers and everything. I mean, it really is a... it's really going to make it very difficult now for people in the numbers that they are now to drive uninsured and not get caught. That being said, I know as we speak, Connor, someone's texting in saying, I haven't seen a Garda checkpoint in 5 or 6 years. But anyway, it's part of the same problem. But you know yourself, that's exactly what people are going to say. I can't remember the last time I was stopped.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could drive your whole career in Ireland and not be stopped, almost literally. And, you know, that goes to the heart of the issue, whatever else you're trying to achieve in road safety. But on insurance, I tell you what is definitely good. It's a proper real-time database, as you were saying. The Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland that I spoke about, they provide the database. It comes in from all the insurance companies. It's uploaded or it's updated every 24 hours. So it's a real live database. And what that means is when the Garda is out and about in his car, the car does have the clever camera, the ANPR camera in it. So the Garda car reads the registration number, immediately checks the live database, and if that car is uninsured or there's any problem, it goes ping, and the Garda can stop the car. Uh-huh. And as I say, they've uploaded 5 million driver records and 3 million vehicle records. So, you know, the Garda will know instantly not only if that car is insured, but who's insured to drive it, uh-huh, and the driver license number of who's insured to drive it. So as I say, there's a lot of people who are uninsured for casual reasons. It's not like they're being villains or anything like that. But I'll give you a classic example. The mother's car is insured, and she insures it properly, and that's absolutely fine. And it's constantly used by the 19-year-old son, and he's not on the policy at all. That sort of behaviour, the Gardaí will now immediately be able to pick up, which is terrific. But it won't solve everything. I mean, they've had this in the UK for the last few years. They were faster doing it than us, which is, you know, shame on us. We could have got our act together earlier. But they've had this system in the UK for a few years, and it works well for them. But they still have an uninsured driver rate of about 4%. Mm. Now, that's a lot better than ours at 8%. But it's not as if they fixed the problem. So, you know, water will find the leaks, Greg, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And there's no perfect system. And there still will be all sorts of imperfections, from kind of skullduggery at one end to people innocently getting it wrong at the other. But, you know, it won't make it perfect. But at least it'll close what was a pretty big hole in the system. And that's got to be good.
Connor Fulton, thank you very much for your time. Connor Fulton, their transport correspondent. We learned this morning that the Health Minister is now to visit Letterkenny University Hospital next Friday. While they have not been officially invited as of yet, GPs say they do welcome the visit. Now, Dr. Kira Steele is one of the signatories of a letter sent some time ago now, actually it was the start of October, to various recipients, the Hospital Management, Sialta, and the Minister for Health. Dr. Kira Steele is one of the Donegal GPs, as I mentioned, and a GP on Buncrana as well. Good morning to you, Dr. Steele. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. I hope you can hear me.
No, loud and clear. I want to start with, in your words and from your perspective, why you came to put your name and help draft this letter in the first place, Kira.
Well, really, it was from the patient's perspective and what we were hearing sort of on a daily basis of the intolerable conditions that they were suffering under in that Letterkenny waiting area, and onwards then in the clinical area in the emergency department, not due to the clinical staff, but just due to the conditions, the overcrowding, the long waits, and even, you know, sort of precipitous discharges, you know, just because of the lack of funding, the lack of budgeting, the lack of the understaffing in the emergency department. So it's really from the patient's perspective that all of us, not just, you know, not just one particular general practice, but all of the general practices were hearing the same story. And I suppose health systems are funny, Greg, from the point of view that they can plod along, you know, with your sleeves rolled up for quite some time, and then you reach a point of critical you know, deficit where the system can actually no longer be maintained on, you know, the goodwill of the staff in the service. So from the patient's perspective is where we were coming from. I think it's unprecedented, you know, that we'd have such a large group of GPs coming together and speaking out, but we really felt like we had no choice. And then, of course, the consultants sort of echoed our concerns because, you know, we know, you know, we're very close, you know, colleagues and, you know, family members are some of our consultants. You know, we know what they're going through on a daily basis, you know, working the extra mile, working the extra hours and working, you know, in conditions where they can't deliver the best care to the patients. And we were seeing patient risk. And that's what led us to speak out.
The problems are quite complex, though. There's been a cautious welcome to some of the measures, you know, looking at what's going on, what can be improved, the establishment of certain facilities. But for many within the hospital that I would speak to, consultants, for an example, it doesn't go far enough. The bottom line is more staff and more funding is needed on top of all of that. So really what we need the health minister to say is, right, okay, I wasn't really fully aware of the situation here. This is a model 3.5 hospital, and we really need to look at this as a special case. Do you know what I mean? Rather than sort of recapping that we've increased funding by such and such, we need a more nuanced response, yeah. I think, this time, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll take two of your points there. The impression that the health service isn't aware, like the consultants have written a letter today and they've reframed the numbers, but all these numbers are HSE numbers, they're SAILTA numbers, they're Letterkenny numbers. You know, the health service is aware of all this, but it takes us to speak out and reframe and say this is at a crisis point at the moment. And, you know, and we're very welcome to Stephen Donnelly calling to Letterkenny. It's been some time coming now since we asked him to come. And we always wanted him to come to Letterkenny rather than meet him in any other location because the patients deserve it. You know, the patients deserve for our boss, essentially, the Minister of Health, whom we're reporting to see the circumstances and the issues in Donegal. We always looked at the emergency department as a proxy for system dysfunction. So, you know, the system dysfunction is underpinned by being under budgeted and understaffed. And, you know, the consultants have reframed, you know, they have looked at the data and they've looked at the resources allocated in the SAILTA group, but also between the Model 3 hospitals nationally were underfunded. You know, the only hospital that's Model 3 hospital that's busier than us is Strata. And we are seriously underfunded, you know, as regards to Our Lady of Lourdes, which did get extra funding in the last couple of years because of the difficulties there. Mm. But the number of inpatients in Galway, for example, in 2022 were 35,000, in Letterkenny 25,000, in Sligo 15,000, and the funding is 452,000 for Galway, 179,000 for Letterkenny, and 176,000 for Sligo.
But, and doesn't just
really
on that
any,
point,
doesn't really
you
make
see,
any sense.
No, it doesn't. But this is why when I have an opportunity to interview it, I'm trying to be a little bit more forensic in it, because in my conversation with Tony Canavan, he said, "Well, this funding for Letterkenny University Hospital is more than that for Sligo University Hospital. So I'm satisfied with the level of funding for the hospital." I'm paraphrasing it there. But then put it to him, yes, but what about the patient numbers? Because you have to divide the patient numbers into the overall funding. So if you've got the head of a regional health group saying, looking at it and saying the top level figures were the same, what's going on here? Now, Tony Canavan did accept much of the issues that were raised. That's a concern. That's a mindset that needs to change, that you don't just look at those top figures.
I think the funding system is historical. You know, the funding doesn't follow the patient. And if you look at the patient funding, Letterkenny has a deficit of 1,300 per patient as compared to other Model 3 hospitals. You know, our ED numbers are between 150 and 200 every day. SAILTA itself issued, you know, warnings not to present to Letterkenny Hospital on a number of occasions this year because of the overcrowding in the department. You know, so SAILTA is aware of the situation. I think it's disingenuous to not to, you know, to look at it deeper. And in fairness to Tony Canavan, he did have a meeting with us, you know, 2 weeks ago in order to look at the structures, and hopefully something will come of that. And they did have an undertaking to have AMAU up and running in December and to look at urgent OPD structures. But that needs to be immediate. You know, we agree with the consultants that there's that it needs to be dug down into the detail of what is happening. And that is why we called for an external review, because, you know, from the GP perspective, we can only tell you that from our patient perspective, there's risk, there's morbidity, there's mortality happening because of budget underfunding, because of long waiting times, because of, you know, even overcrowding. You know, overcrowding in an emergency department, you know, in the BMJ is a risk independent of long waiting times. And, you know, we know that there's an exponential risk if the hospital capacity is over 85% bed capacity. So we know all these figures. SAILTA knows all these figures. The Minister for Health knows all these figures. We just need them to do something about it.
You talked of that letter, which I thought is quite interesting that it be sent to the Minister and others while this review is ongoing. And if you look through the problems and proposed solutions, in fairness, it goes far beyond, you know, what people might perceive as just an issue with the ED. It runs far deeper than that. And I'm hoping to speak on this issue again at the start of next week with some of those involved. But, you know, as I say, I just find it interesting that we've got this level of detail coming from consultants again as this review is ongoing.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's not the consultant's job to do that. There are full-time people in the HSC to have, you know, governance over these issues, you know. So, you know, it really is a cry for help, and that has to be heeded because it is affecting health and safety. You know, I mean, the HICO report of November 23 said that the emergency department was, you know, a healthcare risk to the patients in the department. And, you know, we need to understand the internal structures put in place to, you know, mitigate that now. And to mitigate all the other things, you know, an external review, you know, will justify the consultant's concerns. And, you know, if you look at the patient, the inpatient data and the emergency department presentations with a patient deficit of 1,300 per patient, that's an investment of 45 million that needs to go into Letterkenny Hospital. You know, and that's what we're calling for. That's what we're asking for. You know, we think that Letterkenny is, you know, operating above a Model 3 capacity. You know, we broached this with Tony Canavan. We said it needs to be funded as a Model 3.5 or, you know, Model sub 4- hospital because of the fact that the interlinks are not there. There's no other opportunities for people to avail of healthcare in the county. There's no private hospitals. You know, we know that Galway Hospital is 203 kilometres away. It's not okay for patients to do a 10-hour round trip for a 10-minute appointment. You know, all of these things are unacceptable and need to change. And it's all of these things adding up year by year and that are, you know, leading to patients not being able to accept it anymore. They can't cope with it. And there is a certain amount of activity in the community, which I'd like to bring up, but there's only a limited amount of capacity that can be absorbed by the community. You know, there are certain things that need to be dealt with in the hospital. And the consultant proposals for having an elective unit, that's a very good proposal. For a surgical assessment unit, alongside medical assessment unit, we want that. You know, we are working with PEDS to have a separate PEDS ED and a separate PEDS triage pathway. So even though we have a separate PEDS ED, we don't have a triage pathway separate to the adult triage pathway in ED. So all of those things need to be changed.
Yeah, for sure. And 11 consultants, I think, signed the original letter. I think it's closer to 30 medical professionals from within the hospital now. Signatories of a really significant document, which, as I say, will...
We do have solutions, but, you know, it has to be underpinned by budget and staffing. Like, that can't be ignored. It can't be, you know, sort of said, we'll do this little project here and this little project here, and that's going to, you know, put a plaster on this, on the situation. We need that budget to provide concrete solutions.
Yeah, and we're at a point now where there's a direction of traffic and momentum that can't be lost. And I don't think anyone's going to buy the sticky plaster approach at this point, and certainly the consultants and GPs aren't. Dr. Keira Steele, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That's another one of the GPs who signed that letter. We'll have more coverage of the minister's visit, that letter from consultants, all of their the issues that they've highlighted, the proposed solutions, the concerns over recruitment, and the impact, the recruitment embargo, and the impact that might have on patients' outcomes as well.